Hi, this is Jeff Sika, and I want to thank you for joining me on my podcast. And today we're going to be talking about what's ahead in 2017. But before I go to some of my predictions and strategies that we're going to be utilizing in 2017, that I anticipate to utilize in 2017, I just want to talk briefly about 2016. And when I say briefly, very briefly, just because I think there's some trends that I think need to be addressed when we look ahead. The first is there's this obvious dynamic right now of 2017, of anticipation of what's ahead, primarily because of how much things changed in 2016. I think if anyone would have asked me or told me that we would have had a year that Hillary Clinton would have been defeated by Donald Trump, that everything that transpired, that we would have had yet another good year of a bull market when the economy had been, the so-called economic recovery had been so anemic, I would have been really very, very surprised. And I think some of that surprise has led to where we are now. And I think it's especially important to realize that the vast majority of the performance of this market happened after Trump was elected. And there's a few reasons why I believe it happened. The first is that if ever anyone remembers, there was so much anticipation that Trump would be defeated, and you know the night of the election where futures were collapsing, and then Trump gets elected, and then we have this incredible 10% surge. You know, I think a lot of people had undertaken massive buying, a lot of investors, because there was this sense of relief that the market wasn't going to crash because of Trump. And the one thing we got, you know, that's become very obvious is that there are a lot of policies, including tax cuts and deregulation, that are going to be very positive for investors if they do come to fruition. So, you know, there is reason for optimism when it comes to that. But let me just address what I believe is going to happen in 2017, because I think there's this sentiment right now that believes that for a person or an investor to look favorably on the economy under Trump, that they have to believe that the stock market is going to go up. And I think that's really a fallacy, because I think investors don't believe that the stock market goes up primarily because of a positive economy. As a matter of fact, I would make the argument that a lot of investors have turned a blind eye to the economy, and they've looked at other dynamics such as low interest rates, liquidity being provided by the Fed. You know, there's been a number of factors that investors have looked at above and beyond the economy and even corporate earnings. So I do believe with all my heart that tax cuts, deregulation, and finding a way to reduce government spending is going to be positive for the market. Because I'm a believer that the lifeblood of any economy is the small business, and I think under Obama, small business has taken a beating, from the increase in regulation to the increase in healthcare costs. Being a small business owner myself, I know what that's created in my business and a lot of the businesses of friends or colleagues. It's just not been a good situation. So lower taxes, deregulation, very good for small businesses. I anticipate small businesses are going to hire, and that's a great thing. It's one thing if you get jobs created by larger corporations because Trump is offering incentives to manufacture in the U.S. I think it's an even greater incentive, greater indicator if small businesses start hiring. And that's what I'm hoping for. But when it comes to the market, I have a very different picture. And just to talk about some of my main concerns, I want to first look at what I would consider the three most important factors in determining the short-term direction of the market. And the first is Europe. Now, you know, I know that, as a matter of fact, when I talk about Europe on Fox Business, on the Stuart Varney Show, a lot of people just sort of brush me off on it. But the reality of Europe is that the banking system is in a full-blown collapse. I had made a prediction quite a few years ago that the world's oldest bank, which is Monte Paschi in Italy, would collapse. And I made that prediction. And when I made it, I don't think there were too many people out there that agreed with me. But here we are. And the only thing that Monte Paschi could count on is the European Central Bank continuing to bail them out and with money that they don't have. And they're in a full-blown collapse. And there's a contagion happening in Italy. And that's going to continue to happen. And there's going to be, it's going to continue to spread throughout Europe. And I've been talking for quite a while about entities like Deutsche Bank. You know, we study the interdependency of financial institutions here. It's primarily because we believe that it's not Monte Paschi or Deutsche Bank or any of the bigger banks collapsing that are of major concern. It's the interdependence that banks have with each other. And when it comes to banks like Lehman Brothers, like I mentioned Lehman Brothers, but like Deutsche Bank, who has a lot of similarities to Lehman Brothers. Lehman Brothers was a $630 billion bank before they collapsed. I mean, it's mind-boggling how a bank of an institution of that size could collapse. But what I've been concerned about is, from Deutsche Bank, is not so much what these so-called stress tests measure, but what I've been concerned about is derivative exposure. At one time, now, we have to sort of take these numbers with a grain of salt because they don't always tell us the truth. And at one time, Deutsche Bank had about $78 trillion in derivative exposure. And I'm not here to say that $78 trillion is or was held a significant amount of risk. I would say that the vast majority of that $78 trillion, keep that in mind, I say trillion, is probably justifiable. But there is a percentage of that the regulators do a very bad job in measuring that is in jeopardy. Now, I will give you this. Deutsche Bank has supposedly, again, we're trusting bankers, which remember the last time we did that, but Deutsche Bank supposedly has $48 trillion now. So they've supposedly reduced derivative exposure. We'll see, you know, what the ratios are. But in reality, they create what's called a counterparty risk. It's interdependency risk. It's that, you know, to simplify it, it's the domino effect. One financial institution going into collapse and bringing another financial institution in collapse. And most of that interdependency is created by this derivative exposure, and there's massive, massive incalculable amounts of derivative exposure. And if the banking system was strong in Europe, I'd feel a lot better about it, but it's not. And Europe, in aggregate, is going to, there's going to be a Lehman moment, and it's soon to come. I mean, realistically, I had bet, and here, I hate to use that word, but I had anticipated that the euro would be at parity with the dollar. And there was nobody that was really saying it, and nobody who stuck with that trade as consistently as I did. But if you go back to the Wall Street Journal, 2015, July, I was quoted as talking about that, and that's been a trade that I've held, and here we are. The euro is near parity with the dollar, and Europe is in collapse. So I've been pretty good at predicting things in Europe, and I think we're going to see continued interdependence and what I would consider a very, very serious, serious banking catastrophe happen in Europe, which our banks in the U.S., although stronger, you know, and I will continue to admit that our banks in the U.S. are not nearly as vulnerable as banks in Europe, but there will be some setback. And what it's mostly going to do is it's going to affect this great blissful mood that the market is in, to know that, yes, there are clouds on the horizon, and one of them has to do with the European banking system that in no way can be bailed out by the European economy, nor can be bailed out by the European Central Bank, because they're broke. And I'm not going to go into it, because I have to keep this relatively short, but I'm not going to go into why I believe the European Central Bank is broke and how I could prove it, but I'm just not going to go into it. But I do believe they're broke, and I believe that they've been extending these guarantees on money they don't have. And that's all going to come out. And anyone who wants to talk to me about that further, make an appointment and maybe I'll talk to you about it. But that's beside the fact. The second issue, I think, is this strong dollar. I mean, I think it's fantastic that the dollar is strengthening. A lot of it has to do with the weakness in the euro. But I think it's great that the dollar is strengthening, but it will negatively affect multinationals, and multinational earnings are major components of the Dow and the S&P are going to be negatively affected. And the third is, which I think is important, I just, you know, it's amazing how people don't remember how much and how critical Donald Trump was of Janet Yellen. And Janet Yellen, still the head of the Fed, although I do predict she's going to resign relatively soon, there because there's about to be an outright battle. Now, I will tell you this. I don't believe that Trump wants Janet Yellen to resign just yet because, and I'm not making this up, all you have to do is go back to some of the things that Donald Trump has said about the market and creating an asset bubble in the market, to know that there is, in fact, a built-in scapegoat with the Fed, who has artificially distorted asset prices, created a massive amount of artificial appreciation by suppressing interest rates, and generating massive amounts of liquidity. So you have all the major markets prices have been distorted. There has to be a point where asset valuations come back to normal. And that is going to involve enduring some pain. You know, the quick fixes don't always work, and they're not going to work in this case. So I think what's important to realize is that there's a battle that's about to start. And that battle is between President Trump, soon to be President Trump, and Janet Yellen, and her cohorts. And what I believe is going to happen is that interest rates will start to move up, but it will become very evident that asset prices have become distorted, and markets will go through a very ugly period when that revelation is made. Because sooner or later, someone's got to take the fall for this, and it's going to be the central bank. So what are investors going to realize from how this plays out? They're going to realize that the central bank, Janet Yellen, our previous head of the central bank, Ben Bernanke, have really pulled the wool over their eyes and promised something that they had no ability to deliver. They did not create inflation. They did not generate jobs. They just inflated asset prices and created a bubble. And Donald Trump admitted it and said it before he was elected, admitted it. So that will be another factor, and that factor needs to be considered. So you have three things that really need to be digested before you hit the buy button of stock right now. So what are we recommending? Well, and we'll talk about this in greater detail, but one of the things we've been doing in creating this brand, 2014, Circle Squared was born as an asset management firm that essentially developed and manufactured the products and strategies that we're advocating. Now, since then, we've participated in $350 million of purchases of different types of real estate. And I will talk about that, because where I believe investors should go now is they should look to buy as many real assets as they can. And for us, real assets being real estate has been tremendously, tremendously successful for our partners. And I made a decision to not refer to investors as clients, but as partners, because we are very much partnering in this type of investment strategy that favors real assets over traditional investments. So as I said, we're still advocating investing in certain types of real estate. But one thing we've come to realize is that there's way more dollars chasing fewer deals. So we do realize that when we do get a deal, that deal's probably taken years to develop. And we know that it's going to be sold out relatively quickly. But the bottom line is that we're not in a position where we're seeing an abundance of deals. They're just few and far between. But when we get them, you could be certain that we spend some time with it. And when I say some time, there's only one way to make an investment is not just to go with the crowd, but to really research and look at all the potential negatives. Now, granted, nothing. I mean, real estate is risky. In some ways, it's more risky than the traditional market in many ways. In some cases, you give up liquidity. But still, we think it's the right asset for investors that have all their money in traditional investments. Because what I believe at this point is that investors are very heavily allocated towards stock because they haven't been able to buy bonds. They've been starved out of the bond market. So their allocations to stock are too significantly higher than they should be. So we're advocating either selling, coming out and going into cash, hedging into existing positions. We think it's brilliant to hedge at this point, and investing in real assets like real estate. And, you know, there's going to be a pullback. My prediction is this: somewhere around the inauguration, I think we're going to see a very significant pullback in the traditional market. And investors just need to be prepared. And the best way to be prepared is to hedge, be invested in hold cash, and diversify into real assets. And I think if we stick with that discipline, I believe wholeheartedly that if we stick with that discipline, no matter what's ahead of us in 2017, I believe we could do extremely well if we just stay in our lane and stay focused on the fundamentals and keep grounded in reality and not go with the crowd. I believe we could have an extremely successful investing in 2017. And if all these things that Trump has promised come to fruition, well, let's face it, even if a few of them come to fruition, especially the tax cut, which I said on Stuart Varney's show that if we got the small business tax cuts, I would do a backflips in the office, and I stand by that because it will be great for everybody involved. But still, don't let your enthusiasm about the economy or the future of the economy force you into buying stocks, because stocks are overvalued and we need to be allocated correctly, and we need to look at other ways to preserve what we've worked so hard to accumulate. So with that, I look forward to 2017. I wish everybody a very happy and healthy new year. See you soon.